this morning. We're in Numbers 11. If you want to grab one of the Bibles on the pew, if not, I'll be reading some of it. You know, this is probably timely. You know what the title of the subject was this morning? A whole lot of complaining. And I bet this last few days is a whole lot of complaining about Florida Power and Light, and about the hurricane, and about the weather, and about the heat, about this, about that. So this one's about complaining. This study on Numbers is not going to be Joe that begat Bill that begat Sam that began Frank. It's not. We're not doing that. We're picking the parts out of it, and there is some parallel between what went on in Exodus and the areas that we're going to be looking in Numbers. So this in chapter 11 is when they just had gotten past everything, and it's kind of reached a steady state, and the only thing they have to eat right now is manna. So this is kind of where we're at right now. But chapter 11, the first part of it, now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord, and when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. So that the place was called Taberah, because a fire from the Lord had burned among them. So, a couple questions about this one. The people that complained, what were their hardships? Food. They didn't like what they got. What other grumbling might they have had? It was much better in Egypt. What was good about Egypt?
They all had steady jobs.
There you go. So, is there something else you want to tell us, Brent? Let's see, they were in slavery. They thought they could have all the fish they wanted to eat. At least that's the way they remembered it, and all the onions and all the leeks and everything else.
Well, they also probably had room and board in Egypt, even though they probably didn't have air conditioning.
They didn't have power either. Okay, so they had somewhere to stay. They had food. They had a steady job, which they could be whipped at any time. They were worked mercifully hard. They could be whipped. They could be killed. If you took a whim, you wanted to kill them, you could kill them because they were property, right? They had no rights.
Well, that's interesting that they would much rather be back in that condition instead of out in the woods.
Well, that part of it never comes back in their conversation where they said it was so good in Egypt. They just said we had all this food, this variety of food we could eat. They didn't say anything about how, well, we had a good shelter and we had a good job. And they've never said that. They just said we had all the food we could eat and fill our stomachs. We had all the manna you could eat and fill your stomach too, couldn't you? Didn't you? But that's not what they wanted. And isn't that kind of the way some people are, is they remember all the good about a situation, but they forget about all the bad? And say, gee, if I just went back to that. Sometimes it's what you know as opposposed to the unknown. Isn't that what they're facing right now? They're facing the unknown. They don't know how long they're going to be in the wilderness. Do they know anything about the land of Canaan? Nothing. Not a thing. So they're just, yeah.
Well, my dad always put it as a parallel that we're walking in our, this is our wilderness.
This is our wilderness. Yep, we're used to.
You don't know how long you're wondering.
That's true. You don't know how long you're going to live.
A lot of
How about the fire?
That's normal, though, you know, not to defend it, but it's normal because people like routines.
Even a bad situation, some people will go back to rather than an unknown situation.
Well, and we're talking varieties of spice of life. We're, you know, stuck with one little thing. Like, man, again?
Again? Meatloaf again?
Instead of saying, wait, oh yes, thank you, Lord.
Thank you, Lord. Where is the Lord right now? With them, with the camp. He's in the Ark of the Covenant. What else do they have a reminder of where he is?
Fire.
Pillar of fire. Who's in the pillar of the fire? It's the angel of the Lord, okay? What's another name for the angel of the Lord in Passover? With respect to Passover. Who went through Egypt, destroyed the firstborn? Angel of the Lord. It's also called the destroyer, okay? Now, God the Father, in this part, got angry. The people were griping a lot.
You got to look at it from this point of view.
Who's
existence as slavery over him?
Well, yeah, his point of view is, I'm there. I protected you. You just came through months ago or whatever it was, the sea, and I made it dry for you. I protected you from the Egyptians. I'm giving you food. I'm there. I've got the angel of the Lord showing you this pillar of fire. And all you do is complain. I'll never say thank you for anything. So he gets mad. He gets frustrated with it. And where is the pillar? Where's it at in respect to the camp? It's outside the camp. Some people were too close to that pillar of fire. And it got bigger. The angel of the Lord is the one that's leading them and protecting them. If somebody was to come around, you know, behind them to attack them, the pillar would move behind them. So it was there for their protection and also to lead them where they go, where they were supposed to go. But it got bigger, and people that were around it got consumed. That's what this says. It got consumed. And they were afraid. So what'd they do? Well, they were complaining about the manna, but what did they do when the people got burned up? They complained to Moses. They petitioned Moses. Who should they have petitioned? God directly.
Well, they shouldn't be complaining, actually.
Now, that won't go anywhere. You ever tell that to your kids? You shouldn't be complaining. Well, that goes over really big. So they went directly to Moses. And he prayed, and the fire went back to normal, whatever normal was. Moving down to the next part, they're still complaining. The rabble with them began to crave other food, and again the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. Who's this rabble? Who's the rabble? Back in Exodus, like I said, there's a lot of parallels. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 37. I'm going to read out of that one. 37, 38. The Israelites journeyed from Ramses to Succoth. There were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. Many other people went up with them as well, as large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. So many other people. They weren't Israelites. They could have been slaves that just said, hey, while they're getting out, we're getting out too. we're going to get out and away from this slavery. And talks about him, the rabble among them began to crave other food. So here you had people who were a people of God mixed up with people who just went along for the ride. And they're stirring the pot, figuratively.
They don't know God.
They don't know God.
They don't know what he can do. They don't have the stories. I mean, these guys have been slaves for 400 years, but they don't have the promise.
They don't have the promise. They also probably brought along, they might have brought along some gods from Egypt. So now you've got that in the group. Well, you know, what do we have a lot of adages, don't we? The squeaky wheel gets the oil. So if you want something done, you just complain about it.
Well, that's what we do best.
Of course, I had an adage when somebody says the squeaky wheel gets the oil. I say, yeah, it's the first one I replace too when I get a chance.
On a kind of a weird side note, the word rabble is also the collective noun for butterflies. You got a group of butterflies.
Is a rabble? Yeah.
When they can't find a flower to land on, when they can't find something that they want,
they just complain. Especially the rabble.
There was a lot of butterflies at Walmart before the storm got here.
Yeah. Let's go on. We're running out of time. We'll go on. Manna. The manna was like coriander seed and looked like resin. That's kind of interesting. The people went around gathering it and then ground it in a handmill or crushed it in a mortar. They cooked it in a pot, made it in cakes, and it tasted like something made with olive oil. When the dew settled on the camp at night, the manna also came down. So when did it come? What time of day? At night, okay. Around the time of the dew. Anybody know about how big a coriander seed is? A coriander seed is? Huh? It's tiny. It's about a quarter of an inch. It's not real tiny. It's 3 to 5 millimeters when I looked it up. So it's pretty small. So you got all these seeds that are in there. Now, this one says it looked like resin. I don't remember the word, but they described it differently as far as what it looked like. And that particular material is a resin. Now, was it a resin? Was it golden? I looked at a whole bunch of references, and I couldn't find anything that really said what the color really was, because it says it was colored like this, which is a resin, but that this is a gum resin that they're referring to that comes from a tree, that seeps from a tree. And I'm not sure that's what they were necessarily referring to. So what'd they have to do with it? Yeah, how much work was it to prepare it?
Like granola.
Huh?
Like granola.
Like the what?
The bags of granola, people didn't get them at Walmart, but all you had to do is open them and eat them.
No, that wasn't how you made manna.
They
had to grind it up. Okay, you got a seed, so you got to grind it all up. And you have to get a whole bunch of seeds to grind up, right? What'd they have to do it after they ground it up? Crushed it, ground it up, then they had to do what? Had to boil it. Okay, so it was hard, so they had to get it soft. Once they got it soft, then they'd make it into a cake. Okay, so now you've got this wet cake. What do you have to do with it now? Bake it. Okay, no leaven in it, so it's a flat cake. That's what they had to do to make manna. As a kid, when they talked about it, I heard, well, God sent manna from heaven. I could see little loaves of bread just falling down, just bouncing off the ground and go pick up a loaf of bread. That's not what they did. They had to go do a whole bunch of things in order to prepare this to be bread.
Do you think it came with instructions, or did they have to experiment for a couple of days to figure that out?
I don't know. It doesn't say in Exodus, and it doesn't say in Numbers whether there was any direction or any instructions or anything that said, what he had to go, what they had to go do. But that's what they eventually, this is what they had to go do. Now, did this taste bad? Huh?
Not if you're hungry.
Well, here it says cakes made with olive oil. And in chapter, let me see if I can, well, in 16, somewhere in 16, I believe, it talks about it. And it says it tastes like a wafer made with honey. Honey's pretty sweet. So it didn't taste bad, unless you hate honey. But it didn't taste bad. But imagine eating ice cream every day. Vanilla tastes good. After about 60 days, he'd probably be okay with it, huh?
He goes in where they have 55 things and gets vanilla.
Vanilla? Hey, my man. Got another one. But they got tired of it. It wasn't all of them. Who stirred it up? Who stirred up and says, man, you don't want to eat all this just bread all the time. You want more than this. Let's complain some more. Let's grumble. See if I can.
I wouldn't have given them food for a couple days.
Yeah, I'd say, oh, yeah. Now, there's a mom. There's a mom. That's a mom. You don't like it? All right, you ain't getting nothing to eat. Let's see. I'm looking for where I had it in Jude. There's only one chapter in Jude, so Jude chapter 1. If you look it up on Bible Gateway, though, it has chapter 1. Now you got to click on. And verse 5. Though you already know all this, I won't remind you about the Lord delivered his people out of Egypt, but later destroyed those who did not believe. And the angels who did not keep their positions of authority, but abandoned their homes, these he kept in darkness, bound in everlasting chains for judgment the great day. In a similar way, Sodom and Gomorrah, the surrounding towns, I'm going to jump on down into 8. In the very same way, these dreamers pollute their own bodies, reject authority, slander celestial buildings, beings. Even the archangel was disputing with the devil about the body of Moses, did not dare to bring slander or accusation against them, said the Lord rebuke you. That's not it. 12. These men are blemishes at your love feasts, eating with you without the slightest qualm, shepherds who feed only themselves. They are clouds without rain, blown along by the wind, autumn trees without fruit, and uprooted, twice dead. They are wild waves of the sea, foaming up their shame, wandering stars whom the blackest darkness has been reserved forever. Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesies about these men. See, the Lord is coming with thousands upon thousands of his holy ones to judge everyone, to convict the ungodly and all the ungodly acts they have done in the ungodly way, and the harsh words ungodly sinners have spoken against them. These men are grumblers and fault finders. They follow their own evil desires. They boast about themselves and flatter others for their own advantage. Jude make a reference here to Moses and some of the problems they had with that one and how God dealt with them. And I think he's talking some of this here. And at the end, in verse 16, he said, these men are grumblers and fault finders. That's what they've got. That's what they've got among the party of them that's come with them in Egypt is grumblers and fault finders who are only thinking about themselves. They don't care what it costs somebody else. They just care about themselves. So they're griping, they're grumbling. Verse 10. How are we doing with it, by the way, Steve? Is it?
It's still finished downloading, now it's rebooting.
About quarter of it'll be done.
It'll be there for my case. Yeah.
About the time the bell rings. Okay. Moses heard the people of the family, every family wailing, each at the entrance to his tent. Give me a break. This is a bunch of whiners. All I have is this sweet bread to eat. Oh, I'm going to die, and crying about it. They're crying about it. Unbelievable. Does God give you more than you can take?
I tell them, go back to New York.
Go back to New York. Yeah, these people aren't just saying, you know, I really wish I, you know, this is not good, just have this. These people are crying about it. They're wailing at the entrance to their tent on how horrible it is for them that they only have this bread to eat. What a bunch of wimps.
We have that
today. You do, but I mean, these people would make the drama queens of today look like pikers because they have just taken hyperbole to the max. Huh? You know, Susan went to McDonald's to get us some hamburgers Friday night. In 2.5 hours, she came back late. Later, she came back after she got hamburgers. A lot of people. The Lord became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. He asked the Lord, "Why have you brought this trouble on your servant?" So, who are the people talking to? Who are the people talking to? Moses. Who's God talking to? Is there an expression we have that kind of fits this situation? Where's Moses stuck?
He's the messenger.
Huh?
He's the messenger.
He's stuck between a rock and a hard place, isn't he? And he's feeling the pressure. Did Moses want this job? What did he say initially when he said, "I want you to lead my people out"? You're thinking about somebody else, obviously, not me. Okay? So he never wanted this job. He never wanted to be the guy that they were going to. And they kept complaining to anybody, but mostly to Moses. "What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me?" Who's complaining now? Moses. Okay? He said, "What did I ever do to you that you stuck all these people on me? I said no. You wouldn't take no for an answer. Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth?" Didn't he say, "Why are they my responsibility now? All these whiners. All they do is gripe and complain and say how bad things are, and they whine."
But look at the difference in whining. People are whining when they don't really have that bad. He is whining because it's not really his fault, but he's taking blame for it.
He's getting hit from both sides. Because are these people passive about wanting something besides bread, sweet bread? No, they're pretty aggressive. They want to. What do they say they want to do? I don't know if they really want to do it. What do they say they want to do? Go back to Egypt. That's what they're saying. If we just go back to Egypt, and then go. You know, wouldn't you say that? He said, "Well, if that's what you well, go. Nobody's stopping you. Go."
The path's a little harder this time.
Yeah, it's gonna be a little harder. Well, I'm sure he was. You know, they all had these farm implements, but farm implements could be kind of rough. You know, hoes and pitchforks and rakes and everything else like that. Oh, don't tell me you're going to get it on here at the end.
No.
Oh. "Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised on oath to their forefathers? Why am I stuck taking these people to a land we don't know anything about?" Isn't that what he's really saying? "You made an oath to their forefathers. How long has it been since they've been in Egypt?" 400 and something years, yeah.
"Yeah, all those men born in Egypt, all those men born in that bloodline, why did I get the job of toting them all across?"
And Moses has never seen the promised land. Here it is, this promise of land flowing with milk and honey. Didn't tell him about the giants. But a land flowing with milk and honey that they've never seen. that's going to be theirs, and these people have never owned really anything in their life. They've never had to make decisions because somebody's always told them what to do and when to do it and how to do it and when it has to be done by. So that's what he's got to work with. So he says, why did you stick me with all these terrible people to nursemate? And that's what he's doing. He's playing nursemate. Why'd you do that? Why? They're not mine. Where can I get meat for all these people? Kind of sounds like the disciples when Christ said, we're going to feed everybody at the multitude at the Sermon on the Mount. And they went, what? We don't have enough money to go buy meat for all these people. And he wasn't even thinking along the lines. They weren't thinking along the lines to say, God will provide it. And are you doing the one next week? Okay. He's going to send a lot of meat. It's normal when people... What was the people's problem? What were they lacking?
100% faith.
Faith. They were lacking faith. Matter of fact, they probably didn't have but a smidgen of faith, if they even had that. And then you had the rabble with them that had no faith. They didn't know who God was. They didn't know who this God was. They saw all these things probably in Egypt, and they said, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. Seems like he's the most powerful God today. Maybe I'll find another one that's more powerful tomorrow. But these people didn't really have any faith in God. Or if they did, it was just a little bit that was beginning to just germinate a little bit. And then you got the rabble that's stirring the pot saying, man, we need something besides this manna. This is terrible. This needs to get better. This God you have? Why can't give us any better than the stuff that we find on the ground? What's wrong? We got to complain about this. And then people just took it to the nth degree as far as whining and standing at their tent. Oh, I just need something else besides manna. I'm going to die. It's like working with a bunch of five-year-olds. That's probably not doing deference to the five-year-olds. Here he says, give us meat to eat. I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. Who's been the one who's handled? He's been the complaint department. Who else is handling the load for him?
God's carrying the load.
God's getting angry. Because they're not asking. Are they making any complaints directly to God?
No.
Who gets all the complaints? From about 1.5 million people.
Moses.
One guy, people griping, everybody griping, all the time, 24 hours a day, and there's 1 million of them doing it. He says, I can't do this. I can't do this all by myself. Be there yet? Be there yet? So he says, I can't do it. I can't do it. Whether Moses is close to a nervous breakdown, I don't know, but he's had it. He's had it, okay? Because he's getting it in both ears. He's getting it from all the people, and then he's getting it from God, who's saying, I'm really angry at these people. Maybe I'll just kill them all and start all over again. That was what happened on the mountain. So this has been something that's been going on and on and on. And the two of them aren't talking to each other. Everybody's going through Moses. Everybody, there are 1 million here and God here, and they're all going through Moses. And he says, I can't do it anymore.
And he can't step down. There's no
title. No. Well, he already tried it once.
Yeah, he can't resign.
He said, no. He says, no, I don't want to do this. And he says, you can do it.
He could walk as far as I wanted to, and still, God and the people would still
be. They'd still be right there. There you go. If this is how you were going to, we're going to talk about Aaron and Miriam here in the next couple of lessons. If this is how you were going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I have found favor in your eyes, and do not let me face my own ruin. What's the solution? Just kill me. Just kill me now. How many times people said, just kill me? Just kill me now. When they just are fed up and they can't take it anymore.
I'm sure we all said that this week.
Well, that's... I said that about a generator I tried to get running, I'll tell you. It didn't get running. So Moses' solution is, I resign. Again, just kill me, take me out of the situation. You know, if I found favor in your eyes, just kill me. You think he's kind of at his rope's end? He's there. He's done. He's finished. He's got no help. He's stuck between a rock and a hard place, between God and 1.5 million people. Everybody's complaining. Both sides are complaining. God's mad. The people are whining incessantly. Moses says, I'm done. Just kill me.
He wants the easy way out.
He wants, getting killed, I wouldn't say is easy, but yeah. He wants an end. He says, I'm in pain. I want the pain to stop now.
Chuck, Dad, I understand where it's coming from, because I would gladly fold the lightning, come down and disintegrate, because then I expect to go home.
Well, and I expect that's what Moses expected, is if I found favor, kill me right now, I'm still in a favorable position with God. You've been, because Moses was in a unique position with God. He spoke directly with him. I mean, face to face kind of discussions. They weren't literally face-to-face, because he died if they were face-to-face, but they were face-to-face discussions with God. So you know he's at his wit's end. So... Well, yeah. He'd rather be anywhere than with these 1.5 million people, let me tell you. And I think he's actually in a situation where he's about close to a nervous breakdown. Because it's gotten so bad with these people, and he's so frustrated that he can't do what God wants him to do, or at least what he thinks God wants him to do, because he can't make the people happy. Now, they're going to get meat. Are they going to be happy? No. They're going to whine about something else. And that's what we're going to go on into in the next part of the book that we're going to study is, are they going to get what they're going to get? And I'm not going to say what's in there. You might want to read ahead in Numbers chapter 11. But this is the premise for the class is just, you almost reads like the book of Judges, doesn't it? Here, the people have been delivered from their captivity, and they're already complaining. In Judges, the people were delivered from their persecution by a judge, and it didn't take them very long. They said, oh, God, we're faithful to you, and I'm like that, and they were right back to where they were. And it's just, it's the cycle, I want to call it the cycle of man. You called it something else, didn't you, Doug?
That's a good message.
The cycle of man is that he's thankful for what I got today, but tomorrow, if I don't get anything, I'm not thankful anymore. And it's just one of those things that we have to be kind of wary of, and I'm sure we weren't thankful on Thursday or Wednesday for electricity, but those that have gotten it back and those that we haven't gotten it back yet will be very thankful for electricity. What is it? You don't know what you got till you lose it. And right now the Israelites have lost what they thought was at least they had no uncertainty. They knew what their situation was, and they've gone into a tremendously uncertain situation. They're very weak in the faith, and Moses is stuck between them and God. And that kind of sets the stage for where we're going through this class, is all through Numbers, because there's a lot of parallels between Numbers and Exodus, but there's some amplification of what's going on. Because if you read in Exodus what happened, well, the manna came down, and the doves came down, or the quail came down, and they got fed, and everything like that. And you read what's in Numbers, it's like, hey, it wasn't all hearts and flowers, okay? There was some big bumps in the road, and Numbers goes and amplifies some of those areas that you don't get from Exodus. Any questions? Thanks.